Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Sean.
I'm Jack.
We're from the Dead Rabbit. Thank you for listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, this is Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's November 15th, 2016. Big shout out to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers, and you can follow us on Twitter at beer_sessions. So we got a wild show tonight. We planned this out about 6 months ago. Our good buddies B.R. Roya and Joel Shelton here from the Shelton Brothers, and this is like the world tour of Sebastian Zauer. He's like, what, are you in New York? You're in America for what, 5 weeks or something?
4 weeks, and now it's one more week coming up.
Sebastian Zauer, Freigeist Monarchy, one of our favorite brewers. We had a nice call in with him in the spring about the Rheinheitsgebot. Boat.
Yes.
And but it's really cool that you're here for so long, and we got some great guests. You also made beer with Pete from KCBC and Eric from Greenpoint. So
yeah, das ist richtig.
Yeah, we got a lot of guests in the room tonight. So welcome to the show, man. First, I want to say it's great having you here, and you do such a great job getting out there. I mean, what is it that motivates you? Because you know you're in Germany, but you're doing different brands, and you come to the States what, once a year or twice a year?
This year it's twice. And I was also on a longer extended trip on the West Coast and Texas and Oklahoma. And so this year is always the trip around the Shelton Festival, which was this year taking place in Louisville, Kentucky. And so I was flying into Chicago and doing quite a bit of a trip around that. And then I always like to come all the East Coast spots, New York City, Philly, Baltimore,
D.C. Gemacht.
Yeah, and always Jimmy.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, we... It's such a cool thing being with Sebastian and BR and Joel. And I don't know which one of you represents him, because at Shelton Brothers, you guys have like different hats. Someone's doing French beer, someone's doing Norwegian beer.
BR does French beers.
BR does French.
I don't know anything about those French beers.
And you're what, the German?
Yeah, natürlich. I do the German beers, and Sebastian is one of my best clients.
So let's talk about the beers that you have. I mean, so you have a brewery, a little brew pub in Cologne.
No. That's where everything started in 2009. So doing the first batches on a small system, which was like around a 7-8 barrel system, and making the first batches, and then moved and scaled it up. On now I brew on three different breweries in different breweries in Germany, and making a lot of different type of beers. And I always pick the location according to the beer I want to brew, and so they have different equipment which is fitting, depending on the style.
So you have Freigeist?
Yes.
And what kind of beers are you making there?
It's a modern interpretation of historical German styles. So everything started with Abraxas, which we are going to taste today also here at the radio show. And that was my very first beer. It's a recreation of the beer style Lichtenhainer, which was originally from Thuringia in East Germany, and was a sour smoked wheat beer, which I thought was very interesting combination of flavors. And I like sour beers, I like smoked beers, and the combination would be, sounded really tempting to me. And that's the reason why I decided to make this my very first brew. And there's a lot of beers, Gose and stuff. Nowadays it's very popular. But I started making Gose 5 years ago when it was not really known. It was a really teeny niche beer, pretty much only in Germany. And Adam beer and a lot of other styles are in my portfolio. And that's what I try to bring out to the people also in the U.S. with like brewing at different locations so everyone can gather more knowledge and can taste these beers.
And then you also have the Monarchy.
Yes, that is a beer project I started in 2012 to be more independent and being able to and more flexible, because I started Freigeist with a friend of mine, and so he was busy with a lot of like family stuff and his the brew pub he was running, and so I needed to do a little bit more stuff all the time, and I wasn't busy enough. Was only doing Freigeist at that time, and that's the reason why I wanted to have a new project. Nowadays it's a little bit watered down between the two projects, because I also bought my friend out, so I'm owning both brands, but there was an original reason for why I founded both.
That's great. And BR and Joel, you know, what's it like working with Sebastian? I mean, he's here in the States for, what, 5 weeks?
I can't talk about it anymore. Maybe BR has something to say. I'm shaken up by all this.
Yeah, we're both in therapy. And, you know, when Sebastian comes around, we have a few more appointments. No, it's really interesting because prior to this, the majority of our, pretty much all of our German beers were very strict traditional beers from Mars and Kulmbach. So it's very intriguing from, you know, especially for me from, say, as a beer person, beer home brewer, these styles that just you could not find commercially, they basically vanished. And now they're coming back and there's a resurgence. And, you know, you'd read about them, but you had no idea what they tasted like. But, you know, Sebastian's done all this research into the recipes. And obviously, you know, the techniques are more modern, but it's you're approaching what were styles that have, you know, pretty much disappeared. So
let me taste it. What do we open first, the Fry Guys and the Abraxas with the three X's, right?
No, actually the Köpenickiade, which is a Berliner-style Weisse with spelt malt. So this is a little bit, gives a bit more of a grainy bite to it. 3.5% beer, very easy drinking. Wheat beer as a base. You didn't get that much, Jimmy.
It's enough.
Enjoy
Cheers.
It.
Cheers. Welcome to the show, man. Zum wohl. I know a few words of German, but nothing like Sebastian.
I want you to say the beer name, Jimmy.
Okay, I'll read it out to you.
It should be good.
It's
Yell it.
Köpenickiade.
Excellent.
Sounds Greek. Hey, we got Pete and Pete from KCBC and Eric from Greenpoint. I know you guys have been working just today with Sebastian. Tell us what you guys are working on. You doing collaboration, beer?
Sebastian came by this morning. We had sort of worked on a recipe through email for a few weeks, and today it sort of all came together. So I would say it's sort of a amber, sort of hybrid ale lager. It's fermented with Kolsch yeast. It's got a mix of different sort of amber malts and sort of toasty, biscuity malts. It will be about 5-6%, and it has a good dose of cedar, cedar tips, and some cinnamon. So it'll be sort of a fall to winter spiced, hearty sort of nice. Interesting beer.
And you guys worked at Greenpoint Beer and Ales?
Yep, today. We brewed it at our brewery, yep.
So when you brew at a certain brewery, I mean, who ends up selling that beer? Is that a Greenpoint Beer and Ales beer?
I don't know. We're still trying to figure that out, actually. Pete and I we're thinking of bottling it. You know, some of it might go to Pete's brewery and some of it be sold at our brewery, but yeah.
Maybe barrel a little bit, too.
And what was it like for you, Pete, working with Sebastian and Eric today?
That was great. I just sat back and they did all the work.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's become your kind of modus, right? Where you're here in the States and you're making beer at pretty much every stop, aren't you?
Not every stop, but quite a bit. On this trip, I think it's 12 or 13 different beers I'm brewing with other people, and it's always interesting because there are very different approaches for people, what they how they brew, and what their philosophy is. And I think I'm always a person who likes to learn about stuff, and it's very, very fascinating. And so it's always different kind of beers we brew on this trip. I made a lot of Adam beers, for example, with different breweries. So I pretty much gave the base idea, like, okay, that's and answered all the questions how I would do it. But every brewery pretty much had like, oh, hey, we should actually make this twist and that twist. And I made a version, for example, with Against the Grain, which they want to do a bit of a bourbon barrel finish to it, while the version I made with Goose Island, we will also brew a Gose at some point, and then we will blend it to a German, historic German style Black and Tan pretty much. And then there's always like other projects around. So when we talk with Eric and Pete, that it would be interesting to do something with some local ingredients as well. So we kind of went in this direction, and I think it's always fascinating to brew with wood. And so we ended up using these cedar woods.
Sounds good, man. Well, this is a nice beer. Like, you know, so are there other German brewers working with historical styles? Or are you kind of like the trendsetter?
First of all, I wouldn't call it trendsetter because it's not a trend. It's not really done. I mean, there's like definitely the traditional breweries, obviously, which are making some older styles and which are like continuing to exist. But next to that, there's no one really getting busy with all these forgotten beer styles. It's not really done.
Let's talk about more of the beers that you brought, so we can talk about more styles. Because we know things like Goza, you know, we know like in our friends from Franconia, all the different types of Keller beers and Zwickel beers. You know, what else is out there in Germany? I mean, there's Altbier and Sticka beers and Kolsch's, but you know, let's talk more about these old styles of beer that you like so much. We don't know anything. We're American.
Oh, we talked too much, or that you don't know anything. That's not true, Jimmy. It's in former times. The history of brewing is very old in Germany. I've been a few weeks ago, for example, to the hop museum in Tettnang, which is in the very south of Germany, and they do hop cultivation since 1,100 years. So you need to think of that. Also, a lot of the stuff is way older even, and it's like very interesting what got created over time. Obviously, most of the information from the years until the medieval times is not around anymore, but still some knowledge of that time we can still find nowadays. The older information, they are more more rough, more superficial in the information. And it's getting more detailed pretty much from the 18th and especially in the 19th century. And in former times, the different places had all the different cities had their own type of beer. And it was depending on the resources they had, the kind of ingredients they could get. And that was pretty much the definition of the style of the beers which were made. So it was called after the cities where it was made, and some cities were known for not making good beer and others were known for making good beer, and then sometimes the good beers got transported to other areas, or in the times of the Hanseatic was also sent to other places and got exported, and the times of the colonies even shipped to other continents. And that is pretty interesting. And so there's like a lot of beer styles which I still need to do on my own, and which are completely not known, and which are very fascinating. There's like a beer style called Breuhahn, for example, which I brewed in end of July in Seattle with Holy Mountain, which was a 100% wheat beer, for example, which is very difficult to brew, and was from the area of Hannover. There's a beer style called Braunschweiger Mummer, which is also from that area, which was known to have a very high Play-Doh and a very bad attenuation, which means it was a lot of sweetness was left, so it was very thick and very oily, and was also containing a huge list of quite crazy ingredients, from starting with tree needles over bark, dried plums, different kind of spices, and this all German beer styles, which most of them existed until the Industrial Revolution, some even afterwards. And at that time, lager beer became way more popular, and certain beer styles which were easier to produce, and pretty much until the Industrial Revolution, and also the combination with like the invention of the cooling machine, which got sponsored big time through the different breweries. That was 1873. It was not possible to have a huge brewery because they didn't have the facilities for cooling down that much beer. They needed to cut ice out of rivers, for example, or got the ice from the mountains. And if there are no mountains, and that's in the most parts of Germany, that's the case, you needed to see how to make this. And so everyone only had small resources and could only produce a certain amount of beer.
That's very cool, man. And I like to hear about the way beer was made. And for you guys, Pete and Eric, as brewers, I mean, working with, you know, Sebastian and trying his beers, I mean, what are some things that inspire you, or you might think you want to try something that he's doing?
Well, I've been a fan of Sebastian's beer since they hit the U.S., I guess, a few years ago. So I've had quite a few of his different beers, and I always thought it was interesting that he was sort of exposing Americans to all these new styles or old styles that were being revisited, like Berliner Brown beer. Like, that's a style that I'm really interested in, but I had no experience with. Have you brewed one of those before, Sebastian? I'm curious.
Yes, it's a beer called Berliner Scheiße I made. So it's a little pun on Berliner Weisse, and Scheiße means shit. So it's a brown version of the Berliner Weisse, and it's made with wild strawberries, so that the color says everything.
Sebastian, how's that name going over in Germany?
It's some people like it, some people don't like it so much, but you always know when people standing in front of your stand and they start cracking up about something, you know about which beer name. And now actually people think it's very funny, especially in other countries, when they know what this word means. I remember telling you about it for the first time, and you thought it was the best name.
I was fully behind that name. I cracked up too, and I still do, especially when Jimmy says it.
And what, you had a funny story today. So the guys from Owl Farm in Brooklyn have that beer, and they called you. What did they say?
Well, they didn't have the beer, but the culprit is in this room, I believe, that I got a prank call, whatever you call them, yesterday. And
a
strange woman said, "I'm so-and-so from Owl Farm, and we have the Berliner Scheisse, and the keg's not working right, and it tastes like shit." And I said, "Whoa, okay, what does it taste like?" And she said, "Shit again."
And pours like shit also.
And pours like shit. And then I caught on, but it was pretty funny. So there's never an end to this joke. It'll be told through the ages. The Scheisse word is just, it's the favorite word in German, I believe, isn't it, Sebastian?
Yes, and I heard that Shelton Brothers is trying to push it out everywhere, even with places who don't want to buy it. They say, okay, if you want to buy a case of Cantillon, you need to buy at least one pallet of Berliner Scheisse. Is that right, Joel?
But we are trying to push it out.
A good one. That's pretty great. So I read Michael Lewis's book, Boomerang. He wrote The Big Short, and he analyzed the German psyche, and he says that you guys have a lot of words about shit. So I guess we're on the right topic now.
Yeah, you need to make sure to define everything very specific, you know?
Yeah. But Pete, we'll take a short break, come back in a few minutes, and keep talking about making beer with Berliner Scheisse on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we're on our second beer. We got Sebastian Zauer from Freigeist and the Monarchy here with some of the Shelton Brothers, and our good buddies Pete from KCBC and Eric from Greenpoint. So you guys were talking about, we went a little off track, we were talking about some of the German character and culture and the way they defined, you know, different things in the language. But Pete, I know you had a question for him that's not about, it's about the earth and not about what we put in earth, I guess.
I've got a couple of questions. I'm actually interested in, Sebastian, how you got into beer and history, and maybe what was your previous life? Historian, perhaps?
I didn't have a previous life. No, I just started tasting special beers 12 years ago, and I was born and live again in the area which is very close to the border triangle, Netherlands, Belgium, Germany. So for me it was rather easy to go to Belgium. And I met a lot of people over there at beer festivals, and also a lot of Americans, and so it was very interesting. And so I started tasting different type of beers, and so it was interesting that there was a very different approach to beer in other countries than it is in Germany, because people in Germany always think they know everything about beer. They're like, oh, no, we have the best beer. And then, yeah, it's like when someone is proving you wrong, it's kind of interesting. And so at some point I was interested in the historical beers, and I was checking out in archives and old historical books, and I found a lot of information, and I thought, okay, nowadays we talk in Germany about how great the variety is, or we have in Germany, but it's actually we have 500 different styles which all taste the same. And so it's, but it's more like, okay, hey, in 19th century we had a bigger taste variety in Germany than nowadays. And so that's what I tried to recreate and bring back on the stage, because for me it was not interesting to add or to brew the 1 millionth IPA and bring that out to the people, because it's done and overdone at a certain point. And because our whole craft beer scene is pretty much about all the different flavors and all the different techniques and ideas. And that's the reason why I said, okay, when someone can bring this to the people, then I try to make that happen.
What beer are you drinking now? This is the Geisterzug.
Yes.
So what's that?
That's my interpretation of a Gose. It's made with a historical technique, which means spruce tricks were used in the whirlpool. So the hot word is running over the spruce tricks, and it's getting some sprucey character. I use quite a bit, so you can really get a good bite of it. And yeah, it's brewed like normal Gose, so sourish wheat beer with salt and coriander. And then I have next to the base version, I always like to do two fruited versions to show in which different taste direction beers can go and what the fruit is doing to the beer. And so in this case, I make a quince version, which is a little bit more gentle and mild fruity. And the rhubarb is a little bit more out there, a little bit more placative, sour, and has a bigger bite to it.
And Pete, I don't know if you, did you ask about malt?
Yeah, I was, well, we had a conversation at the brewery earlier kind of about this. Like, I'm also fascinated about these historical styles and would love to taste something authentic from back in the day, but I don't know that we can actually recreate that, because the malt, the varieties of malt, the varieties of hops, maybe even the water, things have changed. The malting techniques. Before the indirect flue, everything was kind of smoked, heated directly, poorly modified. and most of that was finished in the brew house. And even the yeast culture, before Carlsberg got the first pure strain of lager yeast, everything was mixed culture, contaminated. I think, and also like fermented on wood or probably not very clean copper. And so I don't think recreating that is all that easy. I'm wondering if you've worked with maltsters to try to go even deeper.
No, not really, because I always underline that I make modern interpretations of these styles, because I use modern qualities, which are just way more efficient, and a lot of it is not possible to recreate in that way. And for me, it's always the purpose of making good beer, and not so for me, priority is good beer, and the authenticity is important, but not higher than the quality of the taste. And so if you would go for old malt qualities from the 19th centuries, you would have a lot of corn flours and stuff between, and a lot of shit which you don't want to. And that's the reason why a lot of shit again.
And then Joel's keeping track of how many times says shit or shite.
It's 12 until now. Okay. And so
thank you.
Until David. Then, we had pretty much certain techniques like decoction got created because the malt qualities were so bad that they tried to get everything out of it. Nowadays, decoction is still a good purpose, but that was the original idea, to get a little bit out of nothing and or very And so that is more important for me. And trying to recreate that is nearly not possible and wouldn't be a good situation. And a lot of the beers had a very bad attenuation, which means they would be very, very sweet and wouldn't be lasting very long, so that you would need to drink them really fresh. And it would be nearly impossible to really package them, because there would be always, or you would need to pasteurize it, which is not the idea of that kind of beer. And then everything would be like very would be dangerous for having a re-fermentation big time, and then it would explode.
I have a question: the styles that survived into the last century, as opposed to only surviving until the 19th century, do you think your beers are close to what those tasted like, say 80 years ago or 90 years ago?
In a certain way, yes, but it's very difficult to say that precisely because I was not around to taste these beers, but the oldest beers of that time I had were from the 1940s and 60s, yeah. And they were rather close. So the first beer you try, the Köpenickiade, is pretty close to the taste I had from 1960s original Berliner Weisse.
What are some of those styles, Joel? I mean, like alt beers. What are some of the styles that survived into the 20th century?
I wouldn't be the one to remember which styles survived. I think certain kinds of alt beers certainly, well, they survive now, right, still. But I think the Adam beer was around not long ago. And the Goza, of course. But, yeah, a few of them. I think there's some that you don't even know about yet that disappeared in the 1800s. But a lot of them survived in the 1900s.
Yeah, for sure. But it's always it depends from style to style. I mean, there's some beers, for example, the Breuhahn, which I mentioned earlier. There's a book from the very early 19th century, and the author worked for pretty much the police controlling situation, and he was very upset that the quality of the beer of the style went down so much. And at this time, other beverages like coffee and wine became more popular, and he was a little bit upset about it because he wanted to have the beer quality better. So they needed to compete with other beverages. Some of them decided for worse qualities, and so the beer turned down, which is even bigger problem, so people wouldn't drink less of it. So it's a little bit of a devil's circle which was going on, and he was pretty much writing down everything to make sure that the idea and the whole techniques are known, how to make it in a good way, and he was pretty much writing it, and that's on the first page he's mentioning it, that people should read it and try to do what he suggests.
So let's pick like 1700s, can we say Cologne? What was the typical style of beer like then?
Sorry, in which time?
In the 1700s in Cologne, where you're from.
Mostly, you can say that a lot of beers were tending to be more brown. So the pale beers were more unique and more for the higher classes. That's pretty much the situation which you had in the UK as well. And there was, for example, a beer style called Knupp, which is known, and it's that died out very long time ago. And this was used known for being a bottom-fermented beer. Bottom-fermented beers were pretty much only being produced in a decent quality in the old days before good refrigeration in areas like Bohemia and Bavaria, which had caves. When you go to Bamberg, for example, you have like it's built on seven hills. And so you had a lot of caves where the brewery built in, and they could lager their beer, and they had a pretty stable temperature for the lagering. In Cologne, it's very flat, so you don't have that over there. And so they were never allowed to brew bottom fermented beer, as a city said. It's not you're not allowed to. And nowadays it's part of Cologne, but in former times it used to be outside of the city, and there were different kind of breweries, and they made this Knupp, and which was, as I said, bottom fermented, and they also spiced it sometimes. It was quite strong, and the city tried to forbid the people to go outside of the city to taste this beer because sometimes it made people a little bit crazy in their head. but it's reported, so that was the document source, that some people even working for the city went outside to drinking this beer because they were tempted for drinking it.
I get crazy. Eric?
I had a question about how I know that, you know, Germans are fiercely protective of their local beer and the quality of German beer in general. And you bring back a lot of styles, though, you know, giving modern interpretations. How do you feel that your beer is received in Germany nowadays? Is there people who are, respect what you're trying to do and trying to revive these styles and at least provide new flavors? Or is it sort of a mixed crowd of people?
It's pretty mixed. I mean, I started 7 years ago at a time when we didn't have any what you guys call craft beer bars, craft beer shops. I mean, this just happened a very few years ago. So for, and then starting with beers like Abraxas, a sour smoked wheat beer, it was very difficult for people to understand what I was really doing, you know, because they didn't understand or they didn't hear and tasted the stuff which was made in other countries. So they were pretty much only exposed to Pilsner and stuff. And then you come with something which is like, okay, no, that's not beer for me anymore. And this needed obviously a lot of work, a lot of pioneer work from a lot of different people to change that slowly. And now it's getting better and better. And every year you recognize a huge change, which is still very small compared to a lot of the neighboring countries, and especially to the U.S. You can't compare the situation to the U.S. because you guys are doing this since early 80s. And but it's, for us, it's a big change. Just to give you an idea what the status of craft beer is, in my area, the biggest, way biggest city would be Cologne, which is the fourth biggest city in Germany, more than 1 million people. Yeah, very close to Netherlands, Belgium, France, everything what you want. And the first craft beer bottle shop opened July last year, and the first craft beer bar opened 3 weeks ago with 15 drafts. And they have like sweet beers for me on tap now all the time, but it's the first place to have my beer on draft in my pretty much home city all the time.
Germany had better mass market beer than America did and better than most countries did. Is that the main reason why people didn't look for new beer?
It's definitely some part of it. It's also the lobbyism of the purity law, which is very important because breweries said, okay, that's very important that to have this beers, and they pretty much branded and talked bad about beers from other countries. And it's also a little bit about the philosophy, or not the philosophy, but kind of like the attitude of Germans, they, which are not really completely dedicated to having spend a lot of money on food and drinks, and are also not willing to pay that much amount for it, and the willingness to taste experimental stuff. Americans are definitely very open. You're like, oh, hey, I have something new. It's, oh, I want to try it. Germans would be, most of the Germans would be more skeptical, and they wouldn't really, you would kind of need to convince them to taste it.
That's great, man. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. You can be a member. There's a membership drive going on. And no, we're not going to talk for 2 hours about becoming a member, but you should check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. And we're talking about some history in Germany. We're talking about everyday life and the use of the word Scheiße in all walks of life. And I will say on that note, on my subway over on the L train out here to Bushwick, right, Roberta's, I was surrounded by a bunch of high school girls, and they were joking, and one girl said, I can't wait to get home and load up that toilet. And then I started laughing, and the girl said, look, he's laughing. So I'm a regular guy. You know,
and now she's on the radio.
Yeah. I'm going to get arrested. Watch out. So, anyways, but we're having some fun talking about what we love about Sebastian is that, you know, he talks so much about this Rheinheitsgebot, but really he's passionate about the historical styles of beer. And what's wrong with the Rheinheitsgebot? I mean, you're saying that, you said the Monty Python-esque, you know, reality where you can, you have beer, but you can't call it beer. That was on some interview I saw you with.
Yes. It's pretty much, for me, it's the absurd situation when you compare it with making a bread. You can make a bread with very simple ingredients, but then you have a huge variety if you add, like, raisins, walnuts, carrots, potatoes, whatever you want. And it's pretty much the situation in Germany that you make a bread with the basic ingredients, and then Jimmy says, oh, I want to add some walnuts, And then I would say, Jimmy, now it's no bread anymore. And it's like oh, this one thing to add, like, oh, some coriander or some cherries, and then it's not bread anymore.
I heard you say you suggested that rather than say it's beer or not beer, that there should just be a Reinheitsgebot label, which means that certain beers are adhering to that tradition.
Yeah, because for some people,
I think that's a great idea.
For the German brewing lobby, it's very important to continue with this purity law idea. And for me, it's not a problem. You know, I mean, everyone can do what he wants, but it's for me, it's a problem if you tell other people, "Oh, you can't do this," because it's a choice of people what they want. If it's something which is unhealthy, then I have a complete understanding of the situation. It's like, okay, then don't do it. But it's pretty much the authorities tell people, okay, you can't drink this beer because we don't want you to, and that it doesn't make sense. Leave it up to the people to decide what they want.
Yeah, but before you get to that too, the third beer we had is the Freigeis Abraxas. Tell us what that is. There's a little smokiness.
Yes, it's a Lichtenhainer. It's a beer style from Thuringia. So it's a sour smoked wheat beer and was my very first beer. This is a version with pear, which is a little bit gentle, fruity.
Great. And there's another beer. Let's make sure we cover the beers first. And there's a fourth beer. This is the Monarchy, which I think is – I like your – seems like each time you have a new brewery label, you're getting more historical.
Yes, this is a recreation of the of an Edin beer, a beer style which died out in the 1960s. Was reported to be one of the strongest top fermenting beers in Germany. It's an Altbier variation. Most people associate Altbier with Düsseldorf Altbier, but that was only one type, which was like around 5%, or is around 5%, and is a more hoppy version. And Edin beer is a strong, a little bit sourish, a little bit smoky type of Altbier.
And guys, Eric and Pete, what do you think about this, the Methusalem? It's sweet, it's malty.
And this particular version is made with elderberries, by the way.
Elderberries.
I really like it. I think that it's got a nice sort of like dark grape, berry-like acidity too, which really sort of makes it pop. It's light on the palate, nice sort of deep malts. It's really tasty.
Yeah, it's not a beer I'd drink six pints of, but it's excellent, good sipper for maybe after a meal. I like the acidity too. It bounces out that kind of residual sweetness.
And one thing, before we just talk about Reinheitsgebots and just like, generic pilsners and stuff, there are a lot of interesting German beers out there that we've had, and like Urgesticke and Altbier that we get in the States. It's very malty. And I know that customers are looking for those kind of flavors. And also the Franconia cast that the Shelton brothers bring in, they're all kind of like, I call them liquid bread. So there's definitely this malt characteristic without a lot of hops that German brewers are making. But those aren't typical styles, are they? I mean, would you consider those guys craft makers if they're making like more malty, bready flavored beers?
It's kind of a definition of craft beer. That's where I think stateside and also in Europe, people have a very hard time defining it. For my definition, it's not craft beer, because for me it's not so much. It's not so important about the size of the brewery and stuff, but more a little bit of the mentality of the people doing it, being more experimental and trying different stuff and so on. And it's just way more open-minded view. Craft beer is not necessarily positive for me. It's just a description of what kind of people are behind it and what is the philosophy of the drink.
It seems like in Germany people think IPA means craft beer, though, which seems kind of goofy to me.
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. It's like Warsteiner would do an hoppy beer, and they would, now they also make some craft beer. And that's, I think, it's a big problem. That it's not really defined completely.
I think you might be right. I mean, I think people think craft, they think IPAs. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think at this point,
since it doesn't really matter about the size that much.
I think craft is associated with hops these days. But originally, it was just anything probably that wasn't a light American lager, just bringing back, like, Sierra Nevada, bringing back a porter and a pale ale and a stout.
One more thing about Germany. You'd mentioned in Düsseldorf versus Cologne. Are the traditional styles in those cities, first, very different from each other? And the second question is can you get a Kölsch in Düsseldorf or an Altbier in Cologne?
Nine.
That's from your video on the Shelton Brothers.
Scheisse. Historically, these styles are very close to each other, Kölsch and Altbier. So both would belong to the family, what we call Rhineland-style bitter beer. So they are obviously not American IPA type, but historically more on the hoppy side. And it's pretty much the Düsseldorf Altbier is just a dark, a little bit more roasty version of a Kölsch. And both used to be around the same hoppiness grade. Yeah, it's a little bit more of a fun thing, but I think everyone knows was like, oh, nobody officially likes their neighbors, you know. So everyone's like, oh, this is our neighbor. We don't like him.
And then, Pete, you brought a Crowler or a KCBC. What's this?
Yeah.
Let's have Sebastian taste it, and he can tell us what he thinks about this beer.
No, I only drink German beers.
This is a non-hoppy craft beer. This is our interpretation of one of many of our interpretations of a Berliner Weisse. And it's a strawberry guava for a 30-barrel batch that has 900 pounds of strawberry and guava puree. 3.5% Pilsner malt wheat.
Tastes like fruit, man. It's good.
Super crushable.
Now no one's talking. We're like, wow, it's fruity.
It's fruit basket in your mouth.
Fruit basket. And Sebastian?
Sebastian, do you think Americans do bigger flavors? The flavors are more punchy than the German version? The German versions always seem a little more subdued, and that's a balance idea that comes from Germany, I think. Would you agree?
Yes, in general, that's definitely the case. For us, it's very important to have balance and the concept of drinkability, so that you're able to enjoy a lot of the same beer, and even if you have like a strong and complex idea, it should be still drinkable. So that's totally my philosophy, where it's like, okay, my German background is coming through. I like this particular beer a lot. I think it's very nice, fruity. It has a good balance to it. It has nice tartness, good sourness. It's not too sour, so I think it's perfect for summer. That's always great, but it's like it's important to have a certain intensity. Growing up in Germany, it's like a lot of things are rather plain and tend to go in a boring way, in a little bit mainstreamy way. Well, then you can discover a lot of flavors in the US, for example, where you're like, okay, that's also possible to taste like that. It doesn't need to be enormous, extreme, and it's still like settled and balanced, and it's just like it's a little bit more. While some of our stuff is going to plainness at a certain degree.
And you guys have any last questions for him? Nothing? I want to hear Eric say one more question. You're a great brewer. You worked at Browery Lane. You've worked your way up, Greenpoint Beer and Ale. And you're also you're kind of playing around with some historical styles. You're doing very small batch beers.
Yeah, we here and there, Greenpoint is sort of a Polish neighborhood, and we've done a style it's called the Grätzer, or I guess there's a German version of this style.
Grätzer would be the German name. Grodziski
is the Polish name, yeah. So, it's 100% wheat beer, 100% smoked, and I guess some historical descriptions describe it as slightly tart, or some don't, I guess. But yeah, we released that beer, and it kind of blew a lot of people's minds because it was super light and champagne-like, but, you know, had a nice smoke quality. And I don't know, I just think it's fun to be able to teach people about what, you know, beer used to be and bring back styles that may not, you know, make it past the 1960s or something like that. So,
and BR, I usually lean on you on these shows. You usually say a lot. And there's so many good talkers here, you didn't get to say much. Do you want to add anything to the conversation?
No, that's fine. It's just always fascinating for me to hear. I mean, I really enjoy learning about old beer styles. You know, managing our French and Canadian portfolio, you know, I've learned a lot about Bière de Garde, Saison, done research into that. But in terms of the German styles, you know, I'm familiar with the ones that you can, the contemporary, more contemporary styles. So it's just always really fascinating. I mean, Joel and I often talk, like, we'd love to go time travel back to the 1700s and actually taste the beer, you know, as Pete was saying, with the under-modified malt, where everything was kilned over an open flame, yeast wasn't understood, things being fermented in open vessels and in wood. Like, what did this stuff taste like? You know, it would be fascinating to know. And so, at least with Sebastian's beers, you know, they're cleaner and, you know, they're not meant to be drunk at the source the day after they're ready. But it at least gives us a little insight, a little window into what these might have tasted like back in the day. So I'm perfectly happy to take a back seat on this episode and listen in.
It's great having you on the show. And then one of the monarchy beers I've always liked is the Munchausen. Tell us about that beer.
The Munchausen is also another type of Altbier from the area of Münster. So all of these areas are pretty close to each other, but all of them had a distinctive type of brewing. And so also with the Adam beer, Münster is in Westphalia, and it's a big change between the regions. So the area where I come from, it's a bordering area, it's like the Rhineland, it's like between Cologne, and that area would be like a 1 hour drive. But it's pretty much a difference because it's the Romans entered the Rhineland, but they never went to Westphalia. So the Rhineland was always about big trading cities, Cologne and Düsseldorf and stuff. So they were like rich cities which were able to use a lot of hops, which were very expensive in the past. And Westphalia never had that. And so a lot of their beers turned out to be sourish. That's where the area where more of the spiced beers come from.
And then KCBC Stoops Ale. That's been a really popular beer in New York City. You guys have your tasting room now. You're out here in Brooklyn. Stoops Ale is a Kolsch. You know, how true to that is a Cologne-style Kolsch? Are you guys, it's kind of a toasty in some way.
Ours is probably, it's an interpretation of a Kolsch. I think it tastes very Kolsch-like, but it's actually Augustiner lager yeast, fermented warmer, but it's not a true Kolsch yeast strain. And it's Pilsner malt with a little bit of Vienna. And then it has a dry hop, which is not traditional at all. It's dry hop with a little bit of New Zealand Waiiti, gives you that lime note in the finish.
I want you to know it's on the rise. It's a favorite of some of my staff and customers.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. And Joel, anything you want to say to wrap this up?
Scheiße.
Yeah. And you know what? I knew this was going to be a 14th. Fun episode when Joel showed up and we started talking off about the...
Actually, I do have an intelligent question. Do we have time for one intelligent answer?
From you.
The reason ales survived in Germany in the north is because they don't have the mountains and the caves and the ice. Is that a basic way to look at it?
As I said before, the major change happened with the Industrial Revolution and all that, like, pretty much at a certain point, there were more or less bottom-fermented breweries at the end of the 19th century in Germany, and they were producing way bigger amounts and way more top-fermenting breweries. And so that changed way and more, more and more, so that the whole top-fermentation beers went down quite a lot. And pretty much thanks to what we call Malzbier in German, which is like artificial sweetened and colored light beers, which are very bready. This like turned up to go a little bit like that. Top fermenting beers were a little bit growing up again, and nearly all the top fermenting styles got flushed away because in former times.
Flushed.
Yes, I know. I know you like that. So it's like pretty much in Cologne you have Kölsch, Düsseldorf you have still the Altbier left, but nearly all of the other stuff is like. Got substituted through Pilsner and a lot of the newer bottom-fermented beers. And there's very, very few areas where you still have a little bit of the top-fermenting times left, because Germany used to be really big about top-fermenting beers and also about German-style sour beers. But nowadays it's predominantly bottom-fermented, and only also thanks to Hefeweizen, which was very, very low at a certain point, but became way more popular in the recent decades. Top-fermenting beers got a little bit more presence again, but without Hefeweizen, the amount is really teeny in Germany.
Yeah, that's the next show, is why did Hefeweizen become popular at all? I don't know. But I like what you said earlier, that you may have mentioned, I think I saw this on Sheldon Brothers' site. You got to go see. There's a great little video with Sebastian Sauer on the Fry Guys page. That's in my head. I watched that today, and you were talking about the overuse of the yeast and the Hefeweizens that give the banana nose. Can you just talk about that? Because I feel like I already heard you talk about it, but our listeners haven't. So,
I would guess I was talking about that in the background with my wheat beer interpretation, Pimock. So that beer is made with a Kölsch yeast and not with a Hefeweizen yeast, because Hefeweizen would be like the typical banana and clove taste, and the Kölsch yeast is a little bit more focusing on the wheat character, and it's not overcovering it with these fermentation tastes.
And why do you think Hefeweizen, you guys do jump in, last question, why do you think Hefeweizen became such a popular style? It doesn't seem as popular now, but even 10 years ago, I always had a line of Hefeweizen on. It seemed like everyone had a Hefeweizen on for craft beer. Pete, Eric?
I think that, you know, it's not my favorite style, but I think it's sort of an entryway for some people into craft beer. It's got a lot of character. It's typically low bitterness and full-bodied, and, you know, the clove, the spice, almost like spice banana bread quality of it, I think appeals to some people.
Yeah, I find with the heavy phenolics, especially the ones that are more banana clove, people tend to like that. It's not as bitter. And I've had people say to me that they like the glass. Like, they just like that tall wheat beer glass, which is, you know, I mean, the aesthetics of it all. You know, they're not so much about the beverage inside of it as how it looks, and with the serving it with the lime or the lemon slice.
But it's great. It's great in the morning. I used to, when I was on tour as a musician in Germany, I would drink a Weiss beer in the nice glass in the bathtub every morning after a hard night of drinking, which happened every night.
You're a wild man.
I was told that's what you do in Germany, is that when you feel ill from the night before drinking, you drink a Weiss beer and it grinds your stomach up to get ready for more drinking.
Yeah, it's a breakfast
beer. I love it.
Good stuff. Hey, it was great talking more about German beer and beer styles and history. Thank you, Sebastian. It's something that we could definitely do a lot more shows on. And you're here for a few more days. You're traveling down to what, D.C., Baltimore?
Yes, and Philly also.
Yeah. And where else are you going to be making beer? Because the collaboration beers, last thing, when you make these collaboration beers, how do we get them? So you made a beer at Greenpoint with KCBC. Who's going to get those beers? We don't even know yet, do we?
We'll have to wait and see, but I'm sure you can find it at KCBC in Greenpoint.
Ask nicely,
and Jimmy's.
Yeah. And you're going to be down in D.C. Where are you going to make beer down there?
In D.C., I will make beer with D.C. Brow, and tomorrow with Other Half here in New York, and in Philly with Neshaminy Creek.
I'll tell you, man, this show could go on, and I would love to keep this show going tonight, but we got to go. So everyone just give a quick sign-off, say your name and your affiliation. Thanks for coming on the show.
B.R. Rolia with Shelton Brothers Importers.
Eric Olson at Greenpoint Beer & Ale.
Pete Lindgel with KCBC.
Sebastian Sauer, Fragas Beer Kultur.
Joel Shelton, Shelton Brothers.
Shelton Scheisse.
Scheisse Brothers.
And hey, they'll be in town tomorrow somewhere at Shallow and Weber on the Upper East Side. We're going over to Folks Beer. Our good buddy Travis Kaufman and Justin Kennedy organize an event. The Fragas is going to be there and some other brewers. The Solemn Oath, is that their name? The guys from Chicago. They're actually in town. It'd be a first chance to taste them if you're listening live. And in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer extraordinaire, David Tatasciore. Thanks for joining me on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Woo! Scheisse.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.